You're listening to the Yacht Racing Life Podcast, the show for racing sailors everywhere. Featuring exclusive stories and interviews from across the world of competitive sailing. Hosted by British sailing journalist Justin Chisholm. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everybody. I'm Justin Chisholm, welcoming you to another episode of the Yacht Racing Life podcast. We're here to talk about SailGP in Los Angeles. I'm joined, as ever, by Magnus Wheatley from the UK. Magnus, I breathed a big sigh of relief that there was wind for this event, because in the week leading up to it, it didn't look like there was going to be. It was actually a great event, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I quite like the light weather events, and I think I was looking at weather models saying 1 mile an hour winds for Sunday. And yes, it was light, but I don't know, light weather sailing is a factor of our sport. And I don't feel shortchanged at all by what I saw at the weekend. I thought the sailors were, in the main, pretty good. They were obviously fighting the kelp that was there. You saw that in the very opening race with Tom Slingsby, you know, getting a 10th, and Tash Bryant trying to get the weed off the fours. It was real kind of wraparound stuff. I think they all fought that at some point during the weekend, but it was a really good spectacle. I thought Los Angeles was terrific.
And we should pay tribute to SailGP generally, because they created this whole circuit with the ideal of being able to race in these light winds, and it was six knots at its lowest point, I think, on Sunday. And go back a few years and we wouldn't be racing in sailboats in those conditions. So that the evolution of the boats and the technology and the way that they take people off the boat, so it lightens everything up. I think it's great. And I also enjoy the light wind stuff. I don't like it when it's just a complete drifter and the two holes in the water the whole time. For me, that's not exciting. But when they can go hole one, or H1.
Yes.
And the strategy between trying to foil, and you heard that a lot this weekend. I think it's great. And I know when you talk to the sailors, they don't care that it's light winds. They're racing, you know? They're racing just as intently when it's quiet as when it's windy. Magnus, who do you think did the best of that? I guess I know the answer, given the result of the overall regatta.
Yeah, I think Giles Scott was on a tear all weekend, and he never said die, and just fought and scrapped. And I think this is the blueprint of how you win SailGP. If you're back in the pack, if you're seventh or eighth, don't give up. Try and get a sixth. If you're just off the podium, keep going. Push for a podium. And I was really impressed with Giles. His whole demeanor all weekend, from the very, very first press conference all the way to the end, was superb. And it's what we've seen from Giles through the Olympic campaigns, where when he was up against Ben Ainslie and it was almost a slam dunk that Ben was going to get the nomination when he was world champion and all that sort of stuff. He just held his head up high. And I think Canada is looking very, very special. Yes, Sydney was a nightmare for them. That's the kind of race that can really knock your confidence, losing on the last, basically the last tack, the last mm-hmm. last leg, and watching your lead evaporate. That's a killer. That really is. And we've all been there, and it's not very nice. But Giles is a real pro, and he's come back. And big mention to Annie Hager. I think she called just about everything right. And the way that Billy Gooderham was flying that boat, noticeably higher than anybody else, coming out of the tacks, and a lovely kind of settle just after the tack, real speed. And I have to say, when I look at that final race, New Zealand will go away. I think Sam Meach will be having strong words. And Sam's a great guy. We know Sam is a lovely, lovely individual. But I think there'll be some strong words there, because you shouldn't be losing from such a brilliant start and being 200 meters ahead or so, and then sailing into a hole and ignoring the cover, especially in a three-boat shootout. So I think the Kiwis have got an issue probably with Leo Takahashi. He flew well on Saturday. He didn't fly well when it mattered. And the results, you know, an eighth, a second, and a fourth on the Sunday, and then a second overall. Pete actually looked pretty downcast, I have to say, in the interview afterward with Lisa Darmanin. And yeah, there's a lot of questions to be answered there. Slingsby too. He had it's the roller coaster with Slingsby. He is the best sailor in the world. We all know that. And he put some amazing moves on the Saturday, particularly one where he got over the top of, got underneath Brazil to take that race win in race three. But it all went to pot in that in the race where they had to beat the Americans. He was rollicking the crew. He was very out of sorts. Boat wasn't going very well, and then he got completely gassed off the line and was playing catch up in the final. Tom, that's not probably good enough for Tom. I think he'll go to San Francisco, reset, and I would expect them to come out really firing, especially if it's a bit more breeze.
Yeah, definitely therapist's couch, I think, for Tom and the team this week in between this short gap now that we've got until San Francisco. I thought this weekend the premium more than ever around, because it was such a short course, was on starting. And the Kiwis, we were criticizing them, I think, in the last episode. They weren't able to start. And yet they just were on fire this weekend, or certainly on the Saturday. They were first to the first turning mark, I think, three times out of four. And once they're ahead in those more solid flat water conditions, they're very hard to catch.
So what I saw, so the first two starts, where they started to windward, they got a little bit of speed and then had the, I don't know if it's the guts or the brilliance to bear down on the entire fleet and cross across their bows by literally just the smallest distances. I thought they were sailing supremely for the first two. Then they had a kelp issue and then they got a second place. So they had a very, very good Saturday. And Sunday, I was suggesting it was going to be a cakewalk for them. I didn't think they would be challenged at all. And they came out, I think they probably had another issue to get the eighth, and then a second and a fourth, which kind of banked them into the final. That's great. And like you say, with his starting, Pete absolutely bossed that final start. And it was a thing of beauty to see. He was in the perfect position off the line, with pace, with speed, everything going well. And then he let the split happen. And I don't know. What did they see over on that right-hand side of the course? Because as soon as they tacked, they were under the lee of the other boats that had parked up. And the right-hand side just didn't look good. Giles was on a tear going off to the left-hand side. This is almost a match race. You'd never do this. And I find it extraordinary that I think they'll feel they let that one get away, and there'll be a big debrief on that.
Yeah, I think a bit of a combination of a poor strategy, maybe a poor implementation of a good strategy, I'm not sure. And yes, some boat handling issues. However, for me, they did pull off the move of the weekend. I think it was on the Saturday when they powered around the outside of three drifting boats. I think it was the Swiss, the Brits, and
yeah,
somebody else. And I thought it was a fantastic and a clean move. They got a penalty from the umpires. I'm still not sure what the penalty was for or how badly it affected them, but that was right underneath the grandstand. That must have been an absolute buzz for the crowd.
I think it was a boundary penalty. I think
really?
they encroached into the boundary area. But yeah, that was amazing. And I think Ruji Tita did it as well in one race. I'm sure Ruji had a really good race. Maybe it was the sixth or seventh race, and powered down over the Brazilians and another boat. And yeah, I love the fact that it's not over until you cross the line. I absolutely love that. And that you still, in that final 100, 150 meters, whatever it is, you can still take three places, two places. That's pretty good.
Now, let's have a word about the home team. We've been pretty tough on them. I know we had a little chat before we started, and you're still down on them. I'm going to give them a little bit of kudos for not having a terrible regatta. They looked like they were in the mix. They looked like they were competitive. They had a few little sorties at the front of the fleet. I think it was maybe a regatta that they can build from, because they can come home from that and say, yeah, we made some racing mistakes, but we didn't have any disasters. And they scored some points.
Yeah, I went to bed on Saturday night thinking they've got a fourth and a fifth. They've got to be really buzzing on that. And they answered their naysayers. They sailed very well. They weren't starting terribly well, but they were scrapping and fighting. And a fourth and a fifth in this fleet is no disgrace whatsoever. That's a good result for a team that is not full of superstars. It's very good match races. Taylor Canfield, superb. Mike Buckley, superb in monohulls. This is a whole nother level. This is like a Lingi at the America's Cup. It's difficult. You're up against the world's best sailors who have got experience and just know when to turn it on, know how to get forward, know how to pass, know how to sail in big fleets. And they're learning on the job. But fourth and fifth and the last two races on Saturday, great. Now we move forward. And then really Sunday was a bit meh. You know, 10-9-8. It's improving, but you're really down the back of the fleet, getting gassed all the time. Positionally, it's very difficult. It's a big fleet and you get stuffed. But they got through the weekend. They move on to San Francisco. I don't think they're going to be challenging. There was a bizarre interview with Taylor Canfield saying this team is working so hard, it won't be long before we're back on the podium. I'd suggest it's going to be quite a long time before they're back on the podium. But they do seem to be moving, but they don't seem to have the support of American fans. And I think that's an issue. They are acutely aware of the criticism. And there's criticism coming from all quarters. And there is a feeling that the best sailors in America aren't on that boat. And the likes of Harry Melges, you look at Riley Gibbs, people like that. Where are they? And I suspect it's much more of almost a business. And every time I hear Taylor's interviews, I do feel this is more of a business. The whole DJ Khaled thing, joining the board of directors and joining SailGP as the chief hype officer. And it doesn't feel like it's a real sporting team. It's more of a vehicle for something else and commercial sponsorship. And they've got some great sponsors. But you've got to have the results on the water and you've got to feel there's a momentum going forward. And I don't see that. I felt a little bit more confident after Saturday, and then it just reverted to type. And there's an issue that I wonder how long it goes before, and I think this for a lot of the teams, how long it goes before big changes come. We saw some changes. We've seen coaches coming in and out. We've seen a few strategists and wing trimmers being swapped in. How long before fundamental change of these lower-ranked teams? Does it get to mid-season? Does it get to before Europe? And you say, okay, let's bring in somebody who's going to take us to the next level. I just don't know. They seem pretty settled, but it's the hot seat. SailGP is the hot seat, just like Formula One is.
Yeah. And I think we have to bear in mind that this is a team of individuals that have been sailing together for a long time, for a long, long time. And I kind of admire it in a way, in that they're saying, right, you know, we've managed to do the commercial deals. You know, we didn't manage to put together an America's Cup team, but we've got into SailGP and we're here and we're going to stick together as friends. And you know, they fired their mainsail trimmer from the previous season because they had that, disastrous tack that nearly caused serious injury. At the time, I thought that was a big move because Victor's sailed with them for a long time, and that's probably ended friendships, I would have said. I don't know that for a fact, but, he was the scapegoat in all of that. But now they're sticking with it, and they know they're under pressure to bring in the likes of Harry, but they're not doing it. And in a way, I've got a kind of grudging respect for that. And I don't think it's going to play out for them. I don't think they're going to end up on the podium with this configuration.
No.
But it'll be interesting. And, you know, if you want to get the American public behind you, you've got to earn that. And advertising pool cleaners is not, in my way, what fans want from their sporting heroes.
No, and I think also the narrative has been all profoundly negative around them. There's just every time I see Taylor in interview, I don't get it. I just don't get it. And it does feel like they've bought into the franchise. They're there, and they're not. Then winning is not the primary goal here. There's a whole platform of engagement and sponsor commitments and commercial deals going on that is a bigger deal than the actual racing itself. And you see the performances on the water. There's a growing anger almost amongst American fans that we should be better than this. We are America. We should be better. And I think they're right to expect that, because America produces some of the finest sailors we've ever seen. And I think there are fine foiling generation sailors that are there, and they're not making it to the boat. And it doesn't sound as if they're even being trialed or put through simulator tests or anything. It's the Canfield Buckley show, and accept that. So if that's the case, well, fine, we just have to accept that. And
I think so. It brings up an interesting point about the teams that are fully owned, privately owned, if you want to call it that, and the ones that are still part of the league. And if you're part of the league, you're dictated to by the league, and you fly in at the last moment. You don't get the benefit of being able to come a few days early, get over the jet lag, you know, get used to the venue, that sort of stuff. I'll give you an example. The German team, I know, flew in on the Thursday before that event because a friend of mine was on the plane with them. And she's saying, wow, I thought these guys would have been here like a week early. And that's, you know, that's just not how it works.
No.
So there are some advantages to it. And I'm quite enjoying the tension that's being created between the American team and Russell Coutts, who's on several occasions said what we're saying, that they should be bringing in. You know, they should be making changes. And Taylor's answer is like, well, he's not in charge of our team. You know, he's not the one who's trying to build something here.
Quite right.
I mean, it's nice to be able to tell Russell things like that, I guess, at this level.
The only thing is, Justin, I think that it only can go on so long. I don't know the ownership structure of USA, but I could have a very good guess at it. But if results don't come and progress isn't made, and you're constantly down in, you know, 10th, 11th, 12th place, you can only say the narrative of, yes, we're a building team, we're a young team, we're inexperienced at this level, until somebody says, well, go and get the experience then. Go and get the people who are the foiling generation, because Canfield and Buckley are not the foiling generation. They're trying desperately hard, and I salute them for doing it. But it's a similar thing of Chisholm and Wheatley lucking out on the Euro Millions and buying a team. And, oh gosh, we're inexperienced and we don't know how to do this. Well, you just wouldn't do that. You would put people on who are better than you. And, I just wonder how long it can go on for.
On that subject, I wrote a story about what I would do if I won the Euro Millions, because we discussed this a lot when we were in Barcelona, and definitely one of the things I wouldn't do is buy a SailGP team.
Well, they're very expensive now, aren't they? It's about 55 million or something.
And I wouldn't be good enough to be on the boat, and I'm not going to pay for somebody else to go sailing. So, but I think Mike and Taylor are in that position, you know, much, 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 much better sailors than I am, but they are in that position where they're in charge of that campaign. So, you know, they decide who goes sailing. Anyhow, let's move on to the big news from the French on the commercial side. Fantastic bit of I don't know what you call this, strategic thinking, a fantastic deal that sees Kylian Mbappe and his charity come on board with the French team. It just looks like the perfect little hookup, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you know the story of Kylian Mbappe coming from kind of the mean suburbs of Paris and fighting his way through, single mother, all that sort of stuff, and his foundation, inspired by KM, is seen in France as a very, very big deal. He also has a private equity outfit that's actually invested in the team. So, and the following, if we're talking about building an audience here, we're talking about wanting to reach new target audiences, which I never really quite get and quite understand, because I looked at the views last night on YouTube and I think I was one of about 6,000 watching it. That's not mega, maybe just the UK. That's not mega. So, but he can access a different or a very different audience. And as much as I hate the DJ Khaled association, a Kylian Mbappe one was exactly what I was arguing for, that surely in America you could get David Beckham, Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, somebody of that ilk who's a sporting star to promote and push, not a rap star, because that's a totally different cultural angle to come from. Mbappe is a sporting legend, and in France is undoubtedly the biggest sportsman in France. I can't think of another sportsman that's bigger. And it will help the league, it will help, and it will certainly help the French team. The French team, I always have my eye on. I always enjoy watching them. They have flair. That race win in race four, even Tom Slingsby was hanging out of the boat going, well done, guys. Superb win. But Quentin Delapierre said it perfectly. He said, we've got to stop having 50-50 weekends where one day is great and they're knocking on the door. I think they ended up in fourth place overnight on Saturday. And then they sail like drains on the Sunday, trying to get the consistency. And if we look at the top three, they're all consistent. It's all about building consistency. But that is a new team. That is a new team that could say the same thing as USA, going, we need experience, we need this, that, and the other. They're not saying that. They just need to put a series together. It will come, definitely. And then they double down with the L'Oréal announcement, which is fabulous news for our sport in general. You know, Françoise Bettencourt-Myers, who, you know, is the heiress who took over the L'Oréal empire from her grandmother. She's a fabulous supporter of sailing, of women in sailing, and putting significant sums in to take the dominant slot on that wing and on the hull is just all round good news. And also the news that Saint-Tropez has been signed up for two more regattas for the next 2 years. That's fabulous news all round for the French. They just need to work on their on-water stuff. And I think come San Francisco, they'll be the team that I always look for. I think they've got the flair and they're a really interesting team to watch.
I couldn't agree more. The French, I think, do have the potential to win the whole thing this time. You look at the Spanish. Last time they came and snatched it all from nobody. Nobody thought they were going to win the season. And the French are very much good enough to do this. And they just need to start stringing it together. Which leads me on to what I kept thinking all the time when I was watching the racing this weekend. More and more and more, this series is about being able to deliver consistency. That must be what the coaches are talking about. That must be what the teams are striving for. How you do that, this is easier said than done. How you deliver consistency is really a really tricky thing. And it's something I'm going to dig into. I'm going to go to San Francisco next week and hopefully get some interviews with the teams. And that's an area I really want to explore. But I did hear an interview with Joe Glanfield, who's coaching the Canadians, and he said, it wasn't even an interview, it was in a little bit of a social media thing, and he said, let's just do the things that are not hard to do well. So let's not give away stupid advantage to other teams by doing dumb stuff on the race course. And I felt like that's what I was seeing from the Canadians. They just looked smooth and accomplished, and the tension levels were high on the boat for sure, but the simple stuff they got right, and that allowed them to capitalize on opportunities as they came up on the race course.
And I was listening a lot to the onboard comms, and the amount of times it was said in the top 3, 4, 5 boats of keep it simple was incredible. And there was one where Ian Jensen said to Dylan, said, look, just keep it simple. I think they were off the foils. It was the race that they won, the first race. And that's great advice. And it seems to be, that's the permeating thing that seems to be at the top. As soon as you overthink it, the everything goes to pot. Yeah. And I just draw an example of the final, the last tack up to the windward mark. Giles just built in, it was a big fat ley line basically, built in a load of speed. He just gave himself all the options. Keep it simple. There's whether you win by 10 meters or 100 meters, it's of no good. Let's just take a little bit more, calm down, just take the tack. We don't want to do anything crazy at that top mark and have to do two maneuvers or anything silly like that. Just take a big fat ley line, go out to the left, flick it over. We'll fly it through. And it was just about keeping it simple. I think there is a mentality mind shift, and watching the press conferences, the mentality mind shift of a Dylan Fletcher, a Giles Scott, is a scrappy one. They will scrap for every single position. You see it with the Australians. You see it with the Kiwis. If they're sixth, they want fifth. And that'll do. That's fine. Every point counts. And that's the mindset, I think, that is where your consistency comes from. Never give up, never stop, never just keep going and take another place. If you can take one more place, that's better than where you were before. And it's a winning mindset.
Yeah, I think for Giles as well, this is just one event. Let's not get carried away with ourselves. But this is Giles's first time leading a team. And I had him on the podcast a couple of months ago and talked to him about this, and it is a challenge, and it's something he knows he has to step up to, and it feels like he is doing. I don't think it's something that comes naturally to him. He's a fin sailor, a single-handed sailor, who's been used to managing himself, and now he's got the responsibility of dealing with an owner, you know, dealing with the shore crew, dealing with the team on the boat, and he's probably most comfortable doing the latter, you know, working with the guys on the boat. But the audio that I heard from the Canadian boat this weekend, it sounded like he had his confidence that he was leading this team. And yes, he sounded more like Slingsby when Slingsby's on fire. It's just these little comments of, okay, we're doing this. Okay, let's focus on that. And it's impressive. It's impressive to see.
Yeah, so I think with Giles, it was a remarkable performance. He was very, very calm all weekend. And I say remarkable because the devastation of Sydney would have been weighing on his mind. But he obviously is trusting in the process. He's clearly enjoying being the figurehead. He's stepped out of Ben's shadow. As you say, he's now got to deal with Greg, the owner, who was on site, some new commercial partners that came on board. And you can't ask for more than a win in Los Angeles in front of all these, in front of all your people, the paymasters, with such a great performance. And well done to Giles. That was really stepping out of the shadows. I think we potentially can get a little bit excited about season finals and stuff, because it's the consistent mindset, and Canada are looking very, very fast, and they're always up in the hunt, and they're scrapping, and those are the two key components you need in a 12-boat fleet. Is you've got to scrap for everything, and Giles has that mentality. So I can't see why he wouldn't make the final at the end of it, but it's going to be very, very tight. You've got the Kiwis, the Aussies, Canadians, and the Brits. All fighting, and all on any given weekend can win a Grand Prix.
Now, there's a race of a different type on right now. The shore crew have got to get these boats packed up and on the way to San Francisco, and then unpacked again and ready for another weekend's racing. It seems to me like a huge task. I've seen the technical area at SailGP, and it's a monster size operation. So I guess they've done some preparation work, and I'm sure they have a massive plan to get all of this done. But that's going on right now, and then we'll be into another weekend of sailing in San Francisco, one of my favorite venues. It's why I'm going to go. What do you think we can expect from San Francisco, and particularly the teams that have done well will be looking to follow up on that and really capitalize?
I think it really depends on the conditions, and it's quite early season for San Francisco, so we may not see those very strong breezes. We could see it slightly lighter, but I think the top four or five are always going to be in the mix somewhere around. The fight really is the midfield. Where does an Italy or a Germany or Spain, Switzerland, where do they find the next level to go to? Now, if it's more consistent breeze, you can dial into your foiling, you can dial into your race management a bit more. When it's very light, it is pure technique. And we definitely saw on the Sunday that everybody was struggling in the midfield when it was down to four crew on board. Everything became a lot more onerous on each individual. You saw the strategist grinding. It just all looked a bit out. What we'll see in San Francisco, I would expect to see, is full flight time, 90-odd% flight time for the whole fleet. And it's really the people I'm watching for are people like Spain, who had a real up and down regatta. Diego's got to be thinking, what has happened since I won? Why am I not getting these performances? You know, he can get a couple of second places and look really, really good, and then destroys his card with, 10th and 11th places. It's just not good enough. And I think there's probably quite a lot of honest conversations going on. People like USA, people like Spain, people like Switzerland. I was expecting Switzerland in the very, very light to be fantastic. We go down to the Swiss lakes, you can't get anywhere close to them, and they just didn't perform. Denmark obviously had a shocker. Whether they even make it to San Francisco, we don't know. I couldn't find any information on how damaged the actual casing of their foil board was. So if they even make it to their... Denmark, I was really hoping they got Ian Williams as their coach. They brought new people in. I thought this is going to be something special, and it just all just went horribly wrong. So I think there's a lot of teams who are wanting to knock on the door. It's whether they can pull it together. Ruggie Tita was looking slightly better, but only slightly better in the light. I'd like to see a performance from him. I'd like to see... I think he got a third place in the final race. Great, you're on a trajectory. We understand he's a brilliant, brilliant sailor. It's just going to take time for him to gel. And I think a lot of this is we're getting to that point in the season now where you've really got to look at your team and say, have I got all the right components in place? And we're starting to see some shift in the coaches. Pietro Sabello came in. You've got. Will Ryan came in a new role on the flight on wing control. There's people coming in who are very, very good, and I think that could be the difference mid-season to propel people into the European season, go past Brazil, go past New York, and then into the European season. You've got to be a cohesive team by then, and these midfield teams have all got to be looking, are we right? Have we got the right people? How can we challenge? How can we take the next step?
It's fantastic that we're having this sort of conversation about SailGP. It's become, as we've said a few times on this podcast, it's becoming a really exciting and genuine Grand Prix circuit. And it's I think they're all to be commended for it. I'm certainly enjoying watching the racing, whether it's windy or whether it's light. And I think we're going to wrap it up here, Magnus. We're going to do a little shorter than we normally do.
Cool.
Give people a break. But we're looking forward to San Francisco. As I say, I'll be there, so I'll try and give some insight. I'm going to go and sit in the stands and watch it rather than on the computer, watch it from the stands and see what the fans actually get to see. And I'm looking forward to that. And we'll catch up on the Monday, and we'll have another episode out then.
Brilliant. Safe journey, Justin.
That's it for this episode of the Yacht Racing Life podcast. We will be back soon with another top name interview, but in the meantime, check out yachtracinglife.com for more great content from across the sailing world.